Hey guys, I'm Brenna O'Malley. I'm a registered dietitian and creator of The Wellful, and you're listening to The Wellful Podcast, the show where we're featuring exciting and inspiring conversations with the people behind the brands that are changing the food and wellness landscape. Whether they're creating their own food company, bringing in-person connection to an online world, or building the best gym in Bermuda, these entrepreneurs and innovators are sharing their story of how they got to where they are and where they're going next. Thanks for listening. Hey guys, on this episode of The Wellful's Women in Wellness podcast, I'm chatting with Jennifer Frank, who is a registered dietitian and the assistant chief of the Department of Nourishment Arts at the Center for Discovery in upstate New York. Jennifer talks about pursuing nutrition and functional medicine as her second career, how the Center for Discovery takes a 360-degree innovative approach to health, and more about her work there. And she's also sharing how she sees the space of health and nutrition changing in the near future. Jennifer has so much to share and a really diverse and interesting background and experience in health and nutrition, and I learned so much chatting with her. So I'm excited for you to hear this episode and learn from her too. So let's get into it. So can you chat a little bit about your role at the center and a little bit of background of what the center is before we dive in?
Sure. So my official title is Assistant Chief of the Department of Nourishment Arts. And that's really the department here that's everything food. So it encompasses our farm, which is a 300-acre certified organic and biodynamic farm. We have about 30 chefs on staff for our culinary program, and then we have five dietitians, including myself, that work to oversee nutritional status. So it's really this 360-degree view of food here at the center, and then we serve a very challenging clinical population. We serve children and adults with developmental disability, or complex conditions, as we like to refer to it. And that can be anything from somebody who's non-ambulatory, that sort of one in a million disease, all the way through to severe autism. So the clinical population is very diverse and challenging in a lot of aspects. There are about 325 individuals who live with us full-time, another 120 students that come just for day program. And then we have an active clinic where we see roughly 700 to 800 individuals a year. So it's a diverse setting and a diverse place for food. So every day is interesting. It's never a dull day.
In your role, like, what are some things that you are specifically doing?
Mm-hmm. So the biggest pull really of the food program is to take nutritional science and stay current and feed it back through the farm. So essentially we're reading about what's going on in research, especially for the folks that we care for, but really for any sort of neurological issue, because really what we're looking at is people are people. So the developmental disability is one thing, but you're also dealing with human bodies and brains. And so current research that's happening in nutrition, which is very exciting, is what we're sort of looking at. And then based on that science, we're funneling back through the farm and looking at what we can grow and how to get certain aspects of the diet into the individuals that we're caring for, and sort of relying on the culinary program to navigate that. So we'll say, nutritionally, we want X. And we'll talk to the farmers about growing what we need for the nutrients, and then talk to the culinary team about, well, how do we get these nutrients into something that's delicious that people just want to eat. And so it's really this full scope, but as a dietitian, you know, rarely do you get to work for somebody that understands the importance of the nutritional component and how much that drives overall health. And they really do here at the center. And so that's really what I'm tasked with, is making sure that all of those elements are, you know, eventually improving overall health and nutritional status of the guys that we care for.
Yeah. And so you have a very like diverse role and like a lot of different aspects of kind of really integrative with nutrition and an interdisciplinary team. So when you were kind of looking to work in nutrition, can you talk a little bit about how you got into nutrition?
Sure.
And if that was some, like, if you saw yourself in a role like this,
yeah,
when you were starting out, or how that kind of evolved?
Absolutely. So nutrition for me is a second career. I worked in television production for the first part of my career. And then my father became ill. He had cancer, and we sort of went the traditional route. And he wasn't improving. And so I really started getting interested in, you know, 20 years ago, they called it integrative medicine or complementary medicine. So I started looking at therapies for him. And I really became fascinated with that sort of alternative side of things. So I went to work at a holistic spa and yoga studio. I managed that. I left television and decided I needed to find something with a little more passion for me. And in this holistic spa, I was learning about, it's funny, I was learning about biodynamics there because they had Dr. Hauschka products, and I was learning about different techniques for body therapy and yoga and that sort of thing. And this is 20 years ago, so not quite as common as it is now. And I realized that I couldn't really understand why these therapies were alternative without understanding mainstream science and what was conventional. So I looked at nutrition because nutrition is really a great bridge between Eastern and Western medicine. Both at that time had recognized, you know, Eastern medicine way ahead of the game, the importance of food and nutrition. And Western medicine was sort of understanding it, but it seemed to play a role, especially in this complementary sort of field. So I started taking classes at NYU and got very interested in nutrition, very interested in science, and sort of followed through looking at conventional knowledge with sort of complementary medicine experiences. So I worked as a research assistant at Sloan Kettering for a doctor there who was studying integrative medicine. And it was right at the beginning when Sloan Kettering was just starting to sort of think about complementary and alternative medicine. They were, you know, so solid in kind of the conventional approach to cancer, and this was just the beginning. So it was very exciting. We were talking to people like Andrew Weil and Dean Ornish and people who were kind of playing around in this sort of alternative world. And as I went through the early stages of my nutrition career, I was very drawn to chronic disease because for me, you know, you do your clinical rotations, you're in an acute setting, and, you know, nutrition can play a role in acute illness, but not a major role. But I was fascinated by chronic disease and really how nutrition could totally change the course of a disease. So I worked in places, I worked with ALS patients, I was a diabetes educator, Sloan with cancer patients. And so when I moved, I lived in the city for about 10 years and I moved about an hour outside and I thought, oh, where am I gonna work? I'm gonna have to commute. What interesting, you know, work am I gonna find up here? And lo and behold, through the medical director here, I came to the Center for Discovery, and it was this sort of unbelievable world where food was relied upon in a way that I think isn't understood in conventional medicine. And they were really looking to take the food and nutrition program to another level. And yet you're working within the confines of, you know, healthcare, of essentially a traditional setting. And so to try to marry the two and make it successful was very appealing. And that's sort of how I got here. So I always looked at nutrition through that sort of alternative side of conventional medicine. And now, you know, I think I laugh because I see, you know, it's fabulous that all of these physicians are coming into the fold. And I think, well, wait, there's been a whole profession here for a really long time.
Yeah.
Welcome to the party. We're happy you're here. We've known this for quite a while.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. And so when did you come to the center? Like, how long have you been here now?
2009. So it's been almost 10 years.
Okay.
So, yeah. So it's been a while. And I started out, they just wanted the director of nutrition. So when I first came to the center, the farm was under a different department. The chefs were under the culinary program. Mm-hmm. And then I was just coming to oversee the nutrition program. And it was, you know, relatively quickly, I worked closely with our CEO, Patrick Dollard, who's always been a visionary when it comes to food, and Chef Cesare Casella, who's our chief. And we started working together and, you know, sort of said, this is crazy that these food parts aren't as a whole. And so in 2012, we formed the Department of Nourishment Arts to really house everything food so that we could all communicate. And it was funny, we went to, I think it was 2013 or 2014, we went to the James Beard has talks every year.
Yeah.
And we went there and they had Sam Cass, who's from the White House, and Michael Pollan on stage, and they were talking about the state of food. And they said, you know, it really should be that the USDA and the NIH and, you know, everybody should really be housed under one department and government. And Chesire and I looked at each other and we were like, yeah, they're a little late, but they're coming our way.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it feels like we're on the right track.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so amazing.
Yeah.
And so as you kind of came into the role, there were a lot of changes that have happened on even while you've been here, kind of like the melding of those departments and bringing that together. And so what has that been like to, I think sometimes we hear about, like, as I studied dietetics, at least in my experience, that sometimes you'll hear about certain roles where nutrition isn't super respected or necessarily totally understood the value that a dietitian can bring to the care team or those kind of things. And it sounds like it's been such a big part of the center even before you were here and even more so as you've been here. So how has that been kind of just working in a place where your voice is so heard and influential?
Yeah, it's remarkably refreshing. And I think when you don't work at the center, you know, you don't have an understanding about how that's not the case in so many places. And the great news is there's science now. I mean, people are really starting to understand food in a way that we didn't. I mean, when I went to school, we used to say a calorie is just a calorie. It doesn't matter where the food comes from. And I think about how much that whole philosophy has changed. And I think even in just popular culture, when I first came here to the center, I did sort of groups so that I could see kind of what the feeling was around the food. I wanted to get a sense of where people's heads were at, just the line staff and direct care staff. And I would ask, what does organic mean? And people would say things very funny, like, oh, it's dirty. And I thought, why do people keep saying that organic food is dirty? And then I realized that all the posters that we had were of food being pulled from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you didn't understand that context, you know, when you go to the grocery store, it looks all very nice and clean.
Right.
And so I started understanding where I would need to start in terms of education. And now when we have orientation and groups come in, their knowledge is so much further along that it really, you can tell that culturally, people are understanding food in a way that we didn't even just 10
right.
years ago. So I think that's been very helpful. And I think, you know, the science that's coming into play is so important because we work in the medical field. If you can't research it and you can't prove it, it doesn't exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fact that nutrition, although incredibly difficult to study, as I'm finding out with, you know, trying to do our research here, is that we are getting that backing of solid research and really starting to get people understanding that food has to be part of the conversation when we talk about health. One of the things when you work with individuals who have conditions like severe autism or a developmental disability, the focus has been so much on the disability or the autism that we forget that underneath all of that, we need to make sure individuals have nutrients that are supporting their bodies and brains, they're sleeping, their anxiety level is managed, you know, that we're dealing with all of those medical issues that affect all of us. And then we'll look at the disability because it changes so much. I mean, especially with the kids with autism, once you sort of straighten out sleep and GI issues and they're eating well and the nutrition is there, suddenly the behavior is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have kids come in who are new admits who have no lab work. Nobody's ever looked at them medically. It's only been behaviorally.
Oh, and
wow. It's such a missed opportunity and a missed understanding of really what's going on.
Yeah.
And so I think it's that holistic approach, that whole systems approach that is missing in healthcare, and it's what we have here. And so I think, like I said before, what we do here doesn't just apply if you have a disability. It really just applies for overall health promotion and disease prevention, regardless. You know, Patrick, who's our CEO, always has this thing. that if you live long enough, you join our club, meaning Alzheimer's, dementia, all of those things come into play. And really the treatment is not much different than what we're doing in autism. It's really that whole systems care. Mm-hmm. And so that what we're doing here really matters. That's the tagline of the center is, what happens here matters everywhere. And that sort of speaks to that, that it's not really different because we're dealing with developmental disability. We're dealing with human bodies and brains, and that's what we've all got.
Yeah, yeah, that's incredible. And so kind of that you're really like leading in a lot of ways, like you're saying you're going to like different events and like other people are kind of doing similar things, but maybe mm-hmm. a couple years later. And it definitely, what you're saying also, and I think just if you look up the center, you see that it's a real leader in a lot of different areas. So in coming into your different roles that you had a lot of different experience in diverse populations. But how much of it would you say is like learning as you go or being as prepared as you can be? Mm-hmm. But I think that can be kind of scary to someone who's interested in an innovative field or kind of a different position that maybe you haven't heard of someone working in before, is kind of going in when you don't necessarily know everything.
100%.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, I came to the center with a strong background, obviously, clinically in nutrition. Mm-hmm. But had fairly little culinary knowledge and certainly extremely little agricultural knowledge. And I think, you know, as I work with different schools and we have dietetic internships here and that sort of thing, one of the things I would love to see is the field broaden to really have nutrition and schools really focus on those other elements. Because really, when you come in knowing nutrition and just staying in that lane, you really don't have a well-rounded understanding. I always say to farmers and chefs, you know, we have the same language, right? Food is our language, but we don't speak the same language. So what a farmer looks at and what a chef looks at compared to what I look at are totally different. And without a full 360 understanding of food, you really limit your knowledge. And I think for me, it was definitely learning on the job and, you know, acknowledging when I didn't know things and you know, I don't think any question is stupid. And so whenever anybody asks me one, I always say that and I feel the same way, because really I didn't get that education in school. I certainly didn't get it in the hospital. And so now coming here, I've gotten that over the past 10 years, and I still continue to learn every day. When I'm in a farm meeting, I'm still asking what certain terms mean because I have no idea. But it makes me a better clinician, mm-hmm. and it makes it where I understand food in a way that I didn't before. I can educate in a way I couldn't before, and all of that just makes me a better dietitian. And so I would always encourage people to get a well-rounded view of food, not just stay in the nutrition lane, because nutrition is one view. But as we know, we don't eat for nutrients. You know, mm-hmm. we eat food. We eat for a lot of different reasons.
Right.
How to understand quality in a way when you're understanding farming practices. So I think it just rounds you out overall. And then I would say to people who are dietitians out there, I hear a lot when people come for a rotation or that sort of thing at how they feel like something's missing in that clinical setting. And I guess what I would encourage people to do is, you know, you can look for alternative roles, but my interest is always pushing back into the conventional side of things and saying, well, why are we doing this? It's antiquated. This doesn't make sense anymore. Why is Burger King in a hospital? That doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And so pushing back, because we're not going to get any change if everybody who's interested in sort of challenging the norm moves out of the norm.
Right.
It's instead pushing back in and saying, all right, this needs to change, and we really need to work on making this represent what we know now in the field of nutrition. And we know a lot. There's a lot that can be done, a lot that we can change, but we have to kind of help to change the beast as opposed to running from the beast, which I've done both. So, but I think that's really, really important. And, you know, I encourage people to really follow research. I think I have new students that come in all the time, and what they're learning may not be what's kind of cutting edge. Mm-hmm. And really, nutrition is like any other science. What you're looking at 2 years ago is not what we know now. Yeah. And so to really stay current, that's one of my questions whenever I interview anyone. So if anybody ever comes for a job here, you should do this. I want to know who you follow. Who do you listen to? Who do you read? How are you getting your information? And if you're telling me you're getting your information from standard sources in the dietetics field, I know that you're probably several years behind. And what I want to know is, are you interested? Are you seeking out information and people doing things differently with food?
Yeah.
For me, that's very important, because even if you don't know it, you have a curiosity about it. And as long as the curiosity is there, you'll find the information. I'm not worried about that, but you have to have the curiosity.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, especially in, I've always been interested in kind of like diverse or non-traditional roles in nutrition, and have been lucky to like work and intern for people who had those, which is, I think, almost the only way that you learn about them.
Yeah.
Just that, like, I wasn't as interested in a clinical field, and I think sometimes that, or clinical, like, hospital, very, very traditional hospital setting, and I think sometimes that can be a lot of the time what only thing that you hear about on a very surface level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's such a good point, especially that because so many people are interested in that, but maybe that would be even more appealing to more people if you knew that you could incorporate all of these other aspects versus needing to go somewhere so outside of that.
Right, because the field isn't going to change.
Right.
If everybody just keeps marching to the same beat, the field's not going to change. Nutrition's never going to be something that is relied upon in a way that it needs to be. I am becoming a practitioner in functional medicine,
mm-hmm.
and it's such a fascinating field in medicine because it understands the role of nutrition. And it really is this kind of driving force now in chronic disease, and it's in Cleveland Clinic, which is like one of the oldest school institutions.
Yeah.
And how fabulous is it that you have this arm of medicine? It's still, you know, conventionally trained physicians and conventionally trained dietitians, but with an understanding that chronic disease is about a system and how nutrition is really the foundation for really changing that whole field for a person. I mean, I've seen people completely reverse disease through mostly food. I mean, we'll throw exercise and stress and sleep and all that kind of stuff in that ball too. But really the major changes come with the diet. And, you know, the research is pointing to such personalized nutrition now. It's not what diet is right for everybody. It's, oh, you know, this person has metabolic disorder. Maybe for a time we'll do X and then mm-hmm. we'll be able to switch them to Y. And this person has adrenal fatigue, and what they really need is something completely different. And so this personalized approach and this understanding of disease through the lens of nutrition that we haven't had is really just fascinating. It's a fabulous time to be a dietitian right now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think just more awareness of the different roles that you can have in those settings and bring to those settings, and that, like, they're not mutually exclusive, I think, is what 100%. I'm getting at.
Yeah. 100%. And important that they're not.
Right, yeah. Right. So kind of going off of that, who have been kind of some of your influential mentors who you've looked up to?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess also, where are you getting your favorite sources of research or new ideas in nutrition?
So I was lucky enough to go to NYU and Marion Nessel was there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thing I learned the most from her is just, she was writing Food Politics at the time, which kind of was a huge book. And I just always liked her sort of pushback against the norm. You know, she was never kind of satisfied at the state of things and always sort of pushed back. And I think, you know, she's always been somebody that I've long admired. I think now, again, I look at functional medicine. I follow a lot of those practitioners. I think Del Bredesen is doing some interesting things really with Alzheimer's. Mark Hyman has been here several times. I find his work and his connections very interesting. Chris Kresser is somebody that mm-hmm. I'll follow quite a bit. I think he researches everything to the nth degree, and I really trust his sort of view, you know, when you're not able to kind of look at every single study, he sort of gives you the cliff notes, which is, as a clinician, is really helpful.
Yeah.
Really, I find some chefs that I think are doing some really interesting work. We're working right now with Mark Ladner, who used to be at Del Posto. He's helping us with kind of transforming some menus. So it's not only dietitians or right. medical professionals that I like. I like to really talk to chefs who kind of understand food in a particular way. I'm always learning more about biodynamics and the field of agriculture. I think Daphne Miller has done some really interesting books. She wrote a book a few years ago called Pharmacology, where she really looked at agricultural practice and kind of how we could take some of the thinking behind agricultural practice and apply it to health, which I thought was fascinating. She wrote The Jungle Effect as well, which a lot mm-hmm. of people know. So those are the people that I follow, and just any kind of podcast that pops up. You know, we live in a digital age where every study gets a little blurb somewhere.
Right.
And so there's no lack of just looking for what information is out there. You can find a nutrition study published every single day. And, you know, you don't look at one-off kind of studies, but it does pique your interest and your curiosity. And then it's kind of following that through. You know, people will publish book. Rob Wolf just published a new book, Wired to Eat. He's the big paleo guy. And, you know, I don't subscribe to one movement. I think he had really interesting principles a while back when he wrote that. He's now modified his approach and is now kind of saying, well, it's more individualized. And he talks about carb levels and different things that people may need. So, you know, I'm reading that book. This guy, William Lee, just wrote a book. I'm trying to think of what's on my nightstand right now. William Lee just wrote a book, and that's, I think it's Eat to Beat Disease, and he studies angiogenesis, which I think is really fascinating, especially when we're looking at the prevention of chronic disease. And so I have his book, The Circadian Code. I'm reading about rhythms and how that affects food and sleep, because, yeah. you know, sleep is, people don't think of it as intertwined with nutrition, but that's where your absorption comes in, you know, so sleep is so important. So that's one of the things that I've learned to ask as kind of a first question is, well, are you sleeping? And especially like if we look at the kids with autism, generally they're not. Mm-hmm. So then I know, even if they're eating the food, which there's a probability that they're not, but even if they are they really absorbing the nutrients there? So all of it's so intertwined. So it's always, you know, I'm always looking for new information.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important. And you know, if I ask you what you're, how you're getting your information, and you tell me one journal, that doesn't cut it. You're right. not getting the full scope of information. And it's really going out and going after information, which is so easy to get. You can look on any podcast and sit mm-hmm. and listen to really anything, and not that that's the holy grail, that you listen to one podcast and right. that gives you the opinion, but it gives you this wealth of information. It might say a name, it might say a book that you then can follow through with. And I just think that need for information is what makes a really good clinician. And so I'm always looking for that, well, at least when I'm hiring.
Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely what I'm looking for.
Definitely. So kind of going off of that, what does health and wellness mean to you personally? And then how do you see the space of wellness, food, and nutrition kind of evolving this year and in the future?
Mm-hmm. So health and wellness means to me that, you know, it's really keeping my, if we're talking about myself or we're talking about people I'm working with, keeping them doing whatever they value for as long as they can. That's really the name of the game. If I think about it, that's what I want for my own personal journey, and that's what I'm hoping to give to anybody that I work with, is just keeping them as healthy as they can be to do the things that they love and be with the people that they love. That's sort of the be-all, end-all for me. And where I see the field going, I think the field is looking incredibly optimistic. I think food and nutrition is getting its role that it deserves, especially in the sphere of chronic disease. And I think, you know, if I had to look ahead, I would say that the microbiome is going to be what we're going to hear about for a nice long time. I think eventually food will be, you know, what makes your gut bacteria happy, has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. But there's so much signaling that goes on from the microbiome that I think nutrition in 20 years will be much more just about that.
Yeah.
But I'm pleased to see that we've moved on from talking about nutrients. I think we need to talk about food. I think we need to talk about the quality of food that we're eating. People are understanding now that it really does matter where your food comes from. People are getting much more savvy about it. And I think that will eventually turn the tide and we'll start to see kind of this reduction in hopefully general chronic diseases. I think that we'll learn that nutrition is the total basis for a body and for health. And I think that will just continue to grow. So I think, you know, dietitians, like I said, are in a great place. I think we have to continue to push to be part of the conversation because the physicians are getting on board, which is wonderful. But I think dietitians are still the people that understand, well, how do you talk about food? And how do you have somebody come into your office who's clueless? How do you get them on board? How do you kind of step them in? For somebody that's maybe not too educated on food, never thought about it. And I still think dietitians are kind of the kingpin for that kind of relationship. So it's important to advocate for yourself on your healthcare team to really be seen in that role. And you'll get there by really knowing more than what is kind of just the basic level.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. So kind of wrapping up, we have a couple quick fire questions.
Okay.
So not as much of a hot seat.
All right. I'm ready.
Favorite type of nut butter? And would it be crunchy or smooth?
So I'm old school. I mean, I still eat peanut butter. Mm-hmm. And I like it smooth. So.
Perfect.
Yeah. Cashew butter is great. I have a great recipe for cashew bread and I make French toast with it.
Ooh.
So I'm starting to become a big fan of cashew butter, but I just grind up cashews
myself. Yeah.
I don't really buy it, but
yeah.
But in my house, peanut butter is still rules.
Still king. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you a coffee or matcha person?
I don't drink coffee. I'm a old school green tea mm-hmm. girl. Tea is usually what I'll have, and
yeah.
green tea tends to be my favorite. I'm realizing my food choices may be a little bit dated.
No, not at all.
What works.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite brand of green tea?
I usually just have Tazo tea or mm-hmm. we make herbal teas here for Thanksgiving
cool.
Farm. So those are usually
yeah.
the two that I go between. Or if it's a day like today, I'll get some English breakfast and go just for old school black tea to get a little caffeine.
Yeah. Are you a morning or night person?
Morning for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, it just tends to be my most productive time. And, you know, you have 3 kids and you're working full time, so nighttime is just a struggle not to pass out.
Yeah. Do you have any, like, favorite part of, like, morning routine or anything like that that's, like, something you look forward to?
I just started with meditation,
mm-hmm.
Which is something, it was kind of on my to-do list. Like, I would make my little New Year's resolutions every year and put, you know, start meditating on there for years. And then finally this year, I just said, you know what, I'm just going to try 5 minutes. And it really is amazing how mm-hmm. it just centers you and kind of grounds you and gets ready for the day. And it might only be 5 minutes. I don't
right.
sit there for an hour and a half. But it's really amazing, and it's amazing that I miss it on the days that I can't get to it. So I would say meditation is right now kind of king.
Yeah. Do you use like an app or anything, or do you do it on your own?
So it's interesting. Sometimes, I'm trying to find a good meditation teacher because I find if I'm anxious, I have trouble just doing it on my own. And that's mm-hmm. when I sort of use a guided meditation
right.
because that helps me a little bit more. So I need to talk to a good meditation teacher about when I'm anxious, how to kind of tap in, because it tends to be the time that you want it the
right,
most.
You want it the most, yeah.
But in general, it's more just kind of, for me, it's just connection with my breath
mm-hmm.
and getting sort of grounded in the day and sort of stopping my mind, because I find that I wake up without an alarm clock, which is good from the circadian code I learned. But I'll wake up and instantly my mind is just on what do I have to do. So to be able to go into meditation and kind of keep that calm from sleep into waking is really been helpful overall, just to be able to tap into that and get some space from those kind of ongoing thoughts that just never seem to stop.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm a big meditation fan too, but I used to go in person to a studio in New York, which I loved, and I've done Headspace, which is helpful, but I need to get more into like just doing it on your own too.
I read the book 10% Happier a few years ago, and he's got a great podcast. He's got really interesting people on it.
Oh, cool.
And he has an app that tends to have some really nice meditations on there, and I like that. And I like it because he's not, you know, I mean, I come from the sort of alternative holistic world where people were all into meditation. And if you're not there yet, that can feel intimidating. Mm-hmm. So the 10% Happier grouping tends to make it very approachable, and you don't feel like an idiot that you're only doing 5 minutes a day.
I like that. What's something that you're currently obsessed with? So just like something kind of specific that you're really liking, like a food product, maybe a person, or like a study, something you just read about, or a phrase. Can be anything.
I think, you know, so nutrition nerdy, but I'm obsessed with glutathione at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think it's so critical in the body, and it's so protective in nature. Mm-hmm. And I'm a bit obsessed with trying to see how we can increase glutathione levels. I'm not a big supplement person. I will do supplements. Mm-hmm. But I think food is such an involved matrix that we don't understand that I think the body absorbs better when it's in the context of food. So I just kind of look at glutathione as how do I get the body to produce more and absorb more and that sort of thing. So that's a big thing. I'm really looking hard right now at fasting. You know, for somebody that comes with a background in cancer, mm-hmm. the notion that fasting is valuable in cancer is something if you told me that 20 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. At that point, cancer, the name of the game, was just trying to get as much food in as possible. Mm-hmm. So the notion that fasting can be really valuable and actually adjuvant to, you know, traditional therapies in cancer, I think is just remarkable. You know, so trying to sort of suss out that, you know, that time-restricted eating versus fasting mimicking versus, you know, a real fast and where that would fall as a tool.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing right now that I'm most obsessed with clinically trying to sort out. Mm-hmm. I don't have any brilliant insight yet, but I'm looking into all of that. And I think it's just fascinating what the preliminary studies seem to show with it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So are there any final thoughts that you want to share? And then where can everyone keep up with you and learn more about your work and the center?
Sure. I think final thoughts is nutrition is a fantastic field. It's an unrecognized field that's starting to get recognition, which is so exciting. And I really hope, you know, I always love nutrition interns or dietetic interns because we're all a little type A. And, you know, everybody comes in really, you know, well-prepared and interested and hardworking. And I love that people are very interested in sort of our food as medicine approach. And I just really want to engage those people to change conventional medicine through nutrition because I just think it's so important. And, you know, if I walk into one more hospital that has vending machines and a fast food restaurant, in the basement, I'm gonna cry. So it really is gonna take an army of people that feel that, you know, so passionate about food and feel like food can really change the landscape of healthcare, but to actually work in healthcare and stay in there and change it from the inside, I think is you know what I hope to see. To find out more about what we do at the center, you can go to thecenterfordiscovery.org. I have been doing some classes on Facebook Live, so you can tune in and, you know, we go over nutrition, We're hopefully going to be doing a blog soon. So there's always something going on. We have a great media department. And just to keep your eye on the Center for Discovery, because again, even if you know you're not interested in developmental disability, what we're doing through food really affects everyone and really is the story for everyone. So what we're finding out here is going to apply to you now or someday. So keep your eye on us.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you.
That's all for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you liked this episode, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe it wherever you listen to podcasts. And take a screenshot of the episode and put it in your Instagram stories or send an episode to a friend. That's how you can get the word out and support the podcast so that we can continue having cool guests and learning more about people who are changing the health and wellness landscape. So thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you guys next time.